The Mill on the Shore, written by Anne Cleves and read by Sean Barrett. The moral right of the author has been asserted. Chapter 1. There was no funeral because there was no body. The disposal of James Morrissey's remains had turned into a fuss, as Ruth had suspected it might. James's attitude to the established church had been sneering, even blasphemous, and Meg had taken it into her head that a humanist should lead the ceremony. But outside London, it seemed, humanist funerals were unknown, certainly out here in the sticks. Then they had discovered that James had arranged for his remains to be donated for medical research, and after the post-mortem had been shipped discreetly to the nearest university in a van, to be giggled over, Ruth supposed, by medical students. Ruth had thought that would settle the matter, but Meg wanted a show, a formal gathering, and had decided on a memorial service in the church nearest the mill. So they had turned to the parish priest after all, and although he did his best, he seemed overawed by the event. He had never seen the church so full. In his address, he said he had not realized James Morrissey was such a celebrity. He spoke with disappointment, as if at an opportunity missed, giving the impression that he wished he had cultivated James's friendship before it was too late. Ruth wore black to the service, because she always wore black, not as an expression of grief. She was surprised to find she felt so little sadness. She was irritated by the trivial inconveniences caused by James's death, the disruption to her studies, the endless phone calls of condolence, but that hardly counted as grief. Perhaps, she thought, as the vicar stumbled nervously through his speech, she was so detached because of the special circumstances of the family. If James had been her natural father, she might feel differently. As it was, throughout the service, she looked around her with curiosity, admiring the women's stylish hats, seeing how many people she recognized, unmoved by emotion. The contingent from the mill sat together near the front, with Meg and the children in one pew and the rest behind them. They were unfamiliar in their funeral clothes, and Ruth, sitting next to the aisle, twisting her head slightly to look at them, saw them as if for the first time. "We live on top of each other," she thought, "but we're not close at all. I know nothing about them, about Rosie and Jane, the Cairns, even Aidan." The idea was a shock, a revelation, and she put it down to the unaccustomed surroundings. Perhaps she should come to church more often. As she turned back to face the altar, the vicar ran out of platitudes and sat down gratefully. There was a rustle of coats as they stood to sing the 23rd Psalm, and then it was all over. They stood outside in the narrow lane, waiting for someone to take a lead, self-consciously aware of the cameras from the local television station. It was January, cold and dull, with spikes of hail in the easterly wind. The church was on a small hill with a view over flat fields to the sea, very exposed, apparently miles from anywhere. The village was a mile further inland, sheltered by a belt of Scots pine. A sudden gust lifted one of the hats which Ruth had admired, a flat, wide-brimmed straw, from its owner's head, and sent it spinning like a frisbee down the lane. They all watched, glad of the distraction, until it was caught in the hawthorn hedge and retrieved by a young man who presented a natural history quiz on Radio 4. The younger children, who had behaved immaculately throughout the service, began to laugh. Ruth hesitated just inside the church gate and watched the scene from a distance, still intrigued by the idea that they were all strangers. She was 18, naive, and the obvious psychological insight seemed now the most important thing to have come from James's death. She looked around her for examples and saw Kathy Cairns. She had always thought Mrs. Cairns a well-groomed and sophisticated woman, but saw now that she had something of the air of a water rat, with big front teeth, a faint moustache, and fair tufts of hair escaping from her hat. No wonder James ditched her, Ruth thought, though she had always liked Kathy before, felt very close to her, and turned back to the church to wait for her mother, who was, even now after four children, still beautiful.